We're such wimps. We're so namby-pamby. We're so used to coddling ourselves and being coddled and having things our way that we are not prepared for any kind of suffering.
Elizabeth Elliot says, "I believe there is such a thing as self-esteem and self-image, but I do not think that it is something that you and I ought to be paying much attention to. Life is too short for that, as far as I'm concerned." She says, "I would much rather use the energy and the time that I have and direct it towards knowing God, worshiping God, loving God, finding out who He is, and daily praying that He will make me much more like Himself." Welcome to Gateway to Joy, a ministry of author and teacher Elizabeth Elliot.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says. And underneath are the everlasting arms. This is your friend Elizabeth Elliot, talking with you this time about a field with a treasure in it. Last Thanksgiving, my husband and I sat at a table full of high school and college students. We raised the question of whether or not they had any heroes. There was a dead silence. We looked around the table. Everybody was looking around the table at everybody else. Heroes? What do you mean by heroes? And I tried to put myself back to my high school and college days, which wasn't too difficult in my mind. I had dozens of heroes. I had met them. I had read about them. I had heard about them. There were lots of people that I thought were wonderful, people that I wanted to imitate, that I wanted to be like, people that I wished I could be. The answer finally came, almost unanimously, from these kids. Heroes? No. We don't have any heroes. My heart sank. I thought, that's a tragedy. Nobody to emulate? So I sort of scaled down the question. I said, well, is there anybody that you'd like to be like? Another silence. Everybody looked at everybody else. Maybe. No, I don't think so. Nobody that I really want to be like. Rather do my own thing. Well, I had one final desperate attempt. I said, who do you admire? Well, there was a long silence for that one, too, but finally one of the young men said, well, I admire some rock group. Tell you the truth, I can't remember the name of it. And I said, you admire them? Why? Well, he said, I think they stand for something, and they're willing to stand up for it. And, well, I kind of admire that. I said, do you admire what they stand for? Well, he was a little bit ambiguous about that. But, yeah, he could admire somebody. I thought about Jim Elliot and all the heroes that he had. There were a number of missionaries that he admired and wanted to emulate. David Brainerd, missionary to the Indians in New Jersey centuries ago. J.O. Fraser, first missionary to the tribes of southwestern China. Henry Martin of India. J. Hudson Taylor of China. And then he admired those men that were willing to brave the cold of the Yukon during the gold rush. And he memorized many of Robert Service's poetry. For example, he copied into his journal a part of his poem, The Law of the Yukon. Send not your foolish and feeble. Send me your strong and your sane. Strong for the red rage of battle. Sane, for I harry them sore. Send me men girt for the combat. Men who are grit to the core. And I wait for the men who will win me. And I will not be won in a day, and I will not be won by weaklings, subtle and suave and mild, but by men with the hearts of Vikings and the simple faith of a child, desperate, strong, and resistless, unthrottled by fear or defeat. Them will I gild with my treasure, them will I glut with my meat. Jim believed there was treasure better than the Yukon's gold, worth any risk, worth any sacrifice. I think I can picture him now looking back from the celestial city to the journey he had made, thinking the price, after all, didn't amount to much. You and I are not rushing off to the Yukon to dig for gold any more than Jim was. We are not gluttons for punishment. We are not legendary heroes or heroines. We are only ordinary folks who get out of very comfortable beds in the morning, brush our teeth with running water, put on whatever we like to wear, and eat whatever we want for breakfast. Our lives generally don't seem to call for much courage. We're so accustomed to luxury, we think of traffic jams as hardship. It ruins our day if the air conditioner quits, or the waiter says they're fresh out of cherry cheesecake, or our favorite TV program gets preempted by a political speech. Of course, it's only a matter of time before the traffic jam is fixed. Time and money can fix the air conditioner. We can order a different dessert. We expect to get things fixed fast. When we can't, we're at a loss. I think of my own father. He was a very simple, quiet, humble, and quite reticent man. He prayed early every morning for different qualities. I think he had one or two qualities each day of the week that he prayed especially for. One of them was courage. It was not courage for heroic feats of physical endurance. He was not a gold prospector. His job did not take him into combat zones or wars. But he needed courage for the responsibilities of a big family and for his work, which was Christian work, serious work. He was the editor of a small Christian weekly, and because he stuck his neck out in editorials, he got criticized. He needed the courage to write and speak and stand up for what he knew was true, courage to endure. Sometimes I wonder what's happened to courage. We're such wimps. We're so namby-pamby. We're so used to coddling ourselves and being coddled and having things our way that we are not prepared for any kind of suffering, even the simplest kind. Suffering in any form requires courage. These talks have been on the subject of loneliness. And loneliness is certainly not one of the major forms of human suffering, it doesn't seem to me. Maybe it seems that way to me simply because I have experienced loneliness for most of my life in some form or another. And I don't consider my own troubles as beginning to compare with the troubles of others that I read of, such as Solzhenitsyn in the Gulag Archipelago, or Corrie ten Boom in Ravensbrück in Germany. Loneliness is, of course, worse than a traffic jam, or having to do without cheesecake or an air conditioner. Perhaps we hardly think of its calling for courage, because we hardly think of it as real suffering. Yet it fits the simplest definition that I know, having what you don't want, or wanting what you don't have. Loneliness we don't want. It comes from wanting what we don't have. Who can compare sufferings? They are unique as each sufferer is unique. In Proverbs 14:10, it says, "The heart knows its own bitterness." We respond according to our temperaments. Some cast about for solutions, stew, fret, rage, deny the facts. Some sink into an oblivion of self-recrimination or pity. Some chalk it all up to somebody else's fault. Some pray. But all of us may be tempted sometimes to conclude that because God doesn't fix it, God doesn't love me. Whatever happened to courage? In Matthew 13, verse 44, we read about a man who finds a treasure in a field, and he goes and sells everything he has to buy that field. The kingdom of heaven is like a treasure lying buried in a field. The man who found it buried it again, and for sheer joy went and sold everything he had and bought that field. Notice particularly those words, "for sheer joy." If you really could see how the kingdom of heaven is operating in your own life, how your life is held within the scope of the kingdom of heaven, then instead of complaining to God, instead of being tempted to self-pity, instead of always trying to get out of the things that you don't want. You might see that in this very field of loneliness or pressure or difficulty or suffering or discomfort, in that field lies a treasure. What would you trade it for? There are many things that God does not fix precisely because He loves us. Instead of extracting us from the problem, He calls us. In our sorrow or loneliness or pain, He calls. This is a necessary part of the journey, my child. Even if it's the roughest part, it's only a part, and it will not last the whole long way. Remember where I am leading you. Remember what you will find at the end, a home and a haven and a heaven. Courage for the rugged part comes with looking ahead, as the prospectors did in gold rush days. The heroes of the world's great legends let themselves in for all kinds of fearsome troubles because of the promise of a great reward, the favor of the king, a pot of gold, marriage to a princess. Because there was a shining goal, they entered in with heart and will to participate in the as yet unseen and unknown hazards of the dreadful journey. Their heroism lay in acceptance, a wholehearted acceptance of conditions other men would avoid at all cost. And their heroism lay also in endurance.
You've been listening to Gateway to Joy with Elizabeth Elliott, author of over 20 books, including Shadow of the Almighty, The Life and Testament of Jim Elliott. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.